That's awesome.
You don't even know who Tony Hart is, do you, Jeff?
No, but I've heard this music used before, and it just seems completely perfect for what's happening right now.
Well, Tony Hart thought so. Tony Hart was much-loved BBC artist, and he was the godfather.
And still safe to like.
He filled my childhood in a good way, unlike Rolf Harris.
Oh!
And I shopped at the same art shop as him, and I bumped into him so many times, and I was too scared to talk to him.
You moron!
I wish I had.
You never get those chances.
And the person who ran the art shop said, "Just talk to him; he's lovely."
Yeah, I bet he is. Yeah,
and
no.
Him
and Johnny Morris.
I can imagine.
Thanks for the link, Bat Wench. Seeing a photograph, I totally recognize this guy.
Yeah, Tony Hart. He was like your Bob. What's his name?
Bob Ross.
But Bob Ross. But phenomenally better.
Oh, Paul! Please go after
There are no mistakes, only happy accidents.
Yeah.
I've met many families over the year.
Muller's getting upset because no one's clicking his links.
Because we've learned.
Angela used to sell Rolf Harris his pet food when she had a pet shop.
Is that a euphemism?
I don't know. I don't think Angela's one of Batwedge's neighbours, I think. Yes, she is. She's a couple of doors up from her. But
that's Anglia.
I bought a didgeridoo from a place in Hawkshead, and my great aunt used to live in Hawkshead. And I spent my childhood in Hawkshead. And this shop that she had, she said Rolf Harris had been in and bought a didgeridoo, and she got a picture up, but I don't think she's probably got it up anymore. Hello, welcome to the big show. Yes, you're sitting thinking, oh, is this going to be another 2-hour boring marathon of drunk morons talking what they think is tech, cutting edge wise. Yeah, I do apologise for that, it was 2 hours. But apparently it was Comedy Gold, but I don't remember any of it. Joining me this week, I've been recording for a while now, so who knows what's at the start of the show. I can edit, don't worry. Joining me this week, absolutely phenomenal bunch. Welcoming back, in Blocker Vision, the Streak Machine.
Hello.
How you doing, buddy? I haven't seen you in a little while.
Mm.
It's sooner than the last time, though, which is good.
Yeah, that was a long spat of not communicating there. What was it, like a year or something?
About that, yeah. But you're back, mate. You're here. You're in.
I am indeed.
You need to stop downloading the porn, because your bitrate is just, like, horrific. I mean,
I think Skype hates me too, but
no, it's egalitarian, mate. It hates everyone equally. Next to him, Jeffrey Gamet in Supervision from Boulder, Colorado. How are you doing, mate?
I'm doing awesome, and we increased the resolution in the United States just for the real world, which is why I look so good today.
Excellent. The United States is no longer an 8-bit.
That's right.
Yeah. Next to him, Camps, how you doing, mate? Second time out this evening.
Yeah, really good. Fueled up. Ready for big.
Yeah. AKA not got and got his dinner like last time. It means he's gone and got two more beers at least.
two more beers and a quick bag of hula hoops. It'll see me through.
Good man. You don't want to drink on an empty stomach. And no, Righty, how you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. I missed you last couple of weeks.
Have you just put your story in the chat room?
Yeah.
Oh, you don't get that. No. You have to wait till you get. It's a race to the finish, mate. Not a race to the start.
Oh. Yeah, but then I'm still listening to last week's big show, so I thought I'd get in early.
I've got a slight problem. Oh, there we go, it's charging now. Your laptop was charging. Let's just show me the battery warning.
Mine?
No, yeah, the one you're on.
That's dedication for you.
But it's charging now, so there we go. Glad to have you, mate. Well done. Have a nice week off, did you?
Yeah, I did. Thank you very much. Excellent. I've been touring the Norfolk Broads at 5 miles an hour on boat.
Oh, so doubling your speed then.
Yep.
Good man. And next to him, Alan Hauser. We haven't seen you in a while either, mate.
Oh, no, it's been crazy busy, so apologies. And yeah,
that's all right.
Thanks for having me back.
Oh, mate, you're always welcome. You know you are. The Week in Tech, we're going to cover in a second. But first, we've had an email. Now, do you recall me saying that we wanted a little campaign to buy 5 new Mac Minis, because the Skype wall's about to fall over. It's struggling with old Mac Minis. They're all core duo machines. They're not cutting edge or anything. So we wanted five brand new Mac Minis, and we were going to start an appeal, like a Blue Peter type thing. Yeah? Remember that? Mm-hmm. So we've
Can't
had an
you
email.
Take an ointment for that?
No, Blue Peter appeals, mate. Oh, there's got to be a YouTube link to a Blue Peter appeal. Because they were great. You'd send bottle tops, like milk bottle tops, to Blue Peter, and somehow, I have no idea how, they would convert them into money. And they'd give £30,000 to a charity or something like that.
Oh, wow.
It was cool. It was really cool. And they had an appeal every year, and it was always nonsensical. The item that you sent was just ridiculous. And you thought, how the hell do they get money? Even as a five-year-old, I used to think, how the hell are they going to turn that into money? That's ridiculous. But they always did. They turned it into money. So, we've had an email from Tom Ferry. Now, Tom Ferry wrote a review of the shows a couple of weeks ago in iTunes, and he thought, when I read it out, that I thought that he didn't like the shows. He said, no, I like the shows. I just want to give a balanced review and say something positive and something negative, which was fine. I was okay with it. I didn't think he hated the place anyway. But he's joined in the Slack room now, and he's fully in the fold, no question. But he started off the fund. Email says, hi, Ewan. I heard your comment on the Sensible Discussion Big Show about a few new Mac Minis. Although I can't fork over the money to buy one for you or by myself, because we're not overflowing with cash in Silicon Valley like everyone thinks, I would like to donate $100 to your cause. If you had to create a PayPal account in order to donate the $100, because you didn't have one beforehand. And he's gone from the Patreon donation to shoving in this $100, which he sent me now, which is lovely. Thank you, Tom. He said, I challenge all the other Big Show listeners and Mac Show listeners, especially those in the US, to match all or part of my Mac Mini Fund donation. So there you go. There's the
That's
challenge to you
awesome.
All. And as a special recognition to those of us who do donate, say, over $25 to the cause, you could suggest that they could scribble their name on the top of the Mac Mini somewhere in an indelible marker. And I think that's a great idea. So what we're going to do is, we've had a word with Doc, because we can't get everything done everywhere, and people won't be able to come over here and scribble their name on it. So what we're going to do is, if you donate more than $25 to the Skype Hall Fund, then when you do that, we will get your signature. You can email me your signature, and we're going to send all the signatures over on artwork to Doc, and Doc will make a piece of plastic that's got all of the signatures of people who donated for that machine etched into the top of the plastic, and then the plastic will be mounted on top of the iPad. It will be here. And also, he's going to make us some brackets so that we can mount all of those Mac Minis on the wall, and all the cabling will be hung away and that kind of stuff. So, and we'll be able to show you a picture of your Mac Mini that you purchased for BTN with your signature on it on the wall. So thank you.
That's amazing.
That's a great idea. So there you really go. Cool. The Mac Mini, the Blue Peter style Mac Mini fund has now started. We need five Mac Minis for the Skype wall. And if you would like to donate more than $25, then you are more than welcome to, and we will put your signature as a result on the Mac Minis that we purchase with the money that you guys send in. So we don't get any money from any advertising. UK2 pay us nothing. They just provide us with the services that they give us, which saves us a lot of money. Don't make it wrong. You know, we don't get a huge amount of money pouring into to BTN from sponsors or anything like that. We do this out of the love of it, and if you guys can just contribute to keep us going and keep us free and keep us advert free to a large extent, then that would be great. So thank you very much, Tom, for starting off the fund with $100. It's really kind of you.
Amazing.
The Week in Tech, I'm going to start with Righty's story because no one else has chucked one in, but there we go. Righty starts us off with his story, and he bags the Microsoft. Were you thinking the Microsoft story was going to disappear pretty quickly then or something, dude?
Well, no. I didn't concentrate on the main things that happened this week.
Don't BS your way out of this. You were shitting yourself that someone else would put this link in behead of you, and you wouldn't be able to. And especially with Hauschel on the story. I mean, come on. You knew that was going to be a disc.
Well, put it this way. I did my research today, and then I looked at the invite, and I saw that Alan was on. My heart sank. And I thought, I saw Peterson last week jump in. I thought, do you know what? I'm going to do it myself.
You thought, oh, crap, I'm going to put the link in the show notes before we even start, and that way I'll gazump Hauschel into getting the story, and he'll have nothing, and I'll look good.
No, it's all right. I've got a different story.
That's really poured water on the fire.
This wasn't good enough.
Go on, Wrighty. Go. Have your story, Wrighty.
Right. So, obviously, there's a build conference for Microsoft this week, but it wasn't about what they did announce, which is like Windows 10 stuff and HoloLens and Xbox stuff. But it's the one thing they didn't really talk about, which is Windows Phone. And I've got a bit of a soft spot for Windows Phone. If I was going to move from iOS, I'd go to Windows Phone over Android any day. And the only thing that they actually did, I think, is a demo of Skype for Windows Phone. And you're kind of thinking, well, wait a minute, you just released a load of new flagship phones and you've got this new continuum thing where you're talking about universal apps where you can plug your phone into a keyboard, mouse and monitor and have universal apps. Well, I was looking at a story from The Verge and they caught up with the chief of Windows. And I'll quote what he said. He said, if you wanted to reach a lot of phone, if you want to reach a lot of phone customers, Windows Phone isn't the way to do it. And they reckon that Windows Phone is not the way to generate any interest in developers at the moment. And I'm thinking, what the hell? I know they've got a small market share and they're trying really hard and all those sort of things, but it's a really good platform. And it's really weird in this day and age for them not to actually mention it and to then go and say it's not our focus. So if you're a Windows Phone 10 user or Windows Phone 8 user, you're probably thinking, what the hell? And then last week, found out that lots of flagship phones like the 1020 and the 920 weren't getting the promised Windows 10 updates. And I'm just wondering, are they just kind of shoving off to the corner and wither and die? Because you can't go a year not having any advances in your phone operating system, because Android do it every year, Apple do it every year. You're kicking the people in the teeth who've already loyal customers. At the point that they actually do any sort of development, there's going to be no one left. And I'm just thinking, you know, they spent a lot of money with Nokia and the acquisition and all those sort of things. Are they just hoping it would just go away?
Yeah, good question.
My advice is don't buy a Windows phone. Because if this is what Microsoft is doing, then they are, I think, just very quietly letting Windows Phone die.
Which is a shame.
Really?
Well,
I really hope not. Go on, Alan, because say it ain't so, brother.
Well, so Windows 10 Mobile is a key part of Windows Everywhere, which is their big thing at the moment. However, what they don't want to be, and they've written off, obviously, the Lumia sort of purchase, which was done in Steve Ballmer's watch before Satya Nadella came on board, and Nadella was known to be against that. They basically want the Windows Phone market to be like the PC market, with third-party manufacturers doing the hardware. Because one of the problems of Nokia and Lumia was they released so many models, there wasn't room for anyone else to release successful hardware. So, I mean, it's quite, it is a weird one, because, yeah, as a Windows Phone enthusiast, I was looking forward to, right, okay, well, I want to move to a new flagship. And there was obviously the very quiet launch of the Lumia 950s, and they are the current flagships and stuff.
Mm.
But then there was immediately all the hype about, but there's going to be a Surface phone coming, you know, which is going to be the actual one Microsoft cares about rather than the end of the Lumia, sort of the end of the Nokia-designed Lumia line. However, I think actually there's been, in the Barcelona Mobile World Congress, there was actually quite a large amount of third parties suddenly announcing Windows 10 mobiles. So obviously you've got the Hewlett-Packard Elite X3, which is sort of an amazing top-end flagship coming this summer. And you've got weird ones like the Acer Jade Primo, but it is, again, quite an impressive hardware piece of kit. Mm. You've got the smaller manufacturers Blue, and there's actually about, there's actually supposed to be, well, there are coming more Windows 10 mobile handsets than actually were ever released from third-party manufacturers for Windows Phone 8. But, yeah, Microsoft themselves don't really want to be in the hardware game. So you kind of have that one of...
Which is kind of sad, because the hardware is good.
Yeah, it is.
No glitching on the screen, no problems with the images, no worries with colour cast on the cameras.
It's not a scenario there where Microsoft should, if they don't want to be in that game, should have probably just sold off maybe the Lumia brand and the hardware that goes with it.
Is it a sellable brand though?
Yeah, I mean it is a tricky.
Nokia was, but Lumia's not.
They had to buy Nokia and Lumia when they did to keep Windows Phone alive. Now Windows Mobile 10 is core to Windows 10. They really do see it as just another part of, you know, Windows 10 on PC, on tablet, on Xbox, on HoloLens, and on phone.
My thought process as well when I read this was, you know, I remember Satya Nadella standing up about a year and a half ago and going, we are doubling down on the shiz of the Internet of Things. Or I'm paraphrasing there, yeah? And he was adamant about the Internet of Things. And if you look at them walking away from a mobile platform, as in a phone, I think they've got serious problems with implementing their shiz of the Internet of Things, because no one controls the Internet of Things from their computer, and few people control the Internet of Things from their iPad, because if they want to control their home heating, their Belkin, Wemo, light switches and all that kind of stuff, they're going to do it from a phone. So Microsoft can't step away from the phone market.
No.
Because their one device that they've got, which will be the premium interaction with the Internet of Things, would be gone, and that just that would kill the future for them, because Internet of Things, much as I hate to admit it, I poo-pooed it when Nutella said it, but he's right. I mean, I love my phone, I love my Belkin Wemo, I love my Belkin light switches that I haven't fitted up yet, but I will, I promise. And I want to turn things on and off from my phone in my house. I'm sorry, I love it.
This is just where I take a step in and say, well, big companies have made really dumb decisions in the past. HP did one.
Was that the Palm? 5 years ago. No, it's not the Palm Pre. I thought it was a Palm Pre, mate.
That's the Pre.
It's, yeah.
Still works and still sells the right time.
Yeah, still works. Still awesome.
Is that your current phone?
Yes, I am actually testing it. Taking it.
You're writing a review soon.
Well, yeah, it's about time now, I think, yeah. Been testing it for about 2 months' time, just to see how it works in this day and age.
Are doing this as a social experiment?
Pretty much, yeah.
So if people see you using that in the street, do they throw money at you and take pity on you?
No, they're usually just very confused, but because up here, nobody's ever heard of WebOS or of Palm, basically sometimes they've heard of Palm, but the Pre is just unknown territory completely.
Well, it's still dark there as well in the winter, don't forget.
Mostly, yeah. But otherwise, I mean, I worry that Microsoft have kind of lost the whole, well, like you said, the Internet of Things perspective there. If they don't have a mobile device that you have with you in your pocket pretty much everywhere, a phone,
and the Surface ain't going to do it.
I worry, to be honest, about that. I mean, I've seen great ideas go down the drain before, so...
I think you've only got to look as well at I don't want to start an Apple conversation because we would have had that on the back show, but it's pertinent here. You only look at what Apple are doing. They are selling phones by the bucket, by bucket, by bucket load. And the iPad, there's a lot of signs that the iPad is giving someone a twitch at Cupertino going, well, we could do with selling a few more, fellas. You know, the sponsorship of MLB, fact that they've had these, you know, shot on an iPad or used on an iPad or interaction on an iPad campaign a little while ago. So, you know, you've got to be in the phone market, otherwise you're dead as a tech company.
Well, I wonder if that's the case, because when the Verge was talking to this Windows chief, he's talking about more of the 7 and 9 inch tablets that Windows on, because you can go into any supermarket now and you can buy a Windows tablet for £70, and I've got people coming up to me all the time going, I've got this Windows tablet £60, and they're not brilliant, but they're all right. So I'm just wondering if they're looking at that market now over the phone.
But the tablet ain't going to do it, because people aren't going to carry the tablet around with them.
Yeah, but the other problem that Microsoft has got, I was talking to Jim about this today, you know, my mate Jim, he's a Windows phone fan, he's got the 950, and it's a gorgeous phone, it's absolutely beautiful, but correct me if I'm wrong, I've not seen one advert for it on the TV.
I say, I think it really is, you know, Microsoft, Microsoft actually want the phone market to go like they've got the PC market. So they do, and I do believe they are going to bring out, it looks like now, Easter next year, a Surface phone, which is obviously a hell of a long time for not having sort of primary hard, your own sort of primary hardware. But then I think they do want it to be like Surface. They only want to release hardware where they think they're going to push the market forward or show something that one of their third-party hardware partners isn't going to offer. So, for example, I think they're going to wait for a Surface phone till Easter next year when the next generation of Intel chips are out, and it's actually going to be an Intel-based chip phone that probably means it can run the Windows, you know, normal Windows applications as well as the store applications. Meantime, yeah, you know, Windows phone, Windows 10 Mobile is going to benefit from the universal apps, but you can understand them saying, well, developers are going to develop for the 270 million that we've got on Windows 10, and then we'll make it really easy for them to actually make it work on Windows 10 Mobile as an afterthought almost. But yeah, we're not, you know, we've been trying for 3-4 years to win hearts and minds saying build an app for our phone OS, and that's not worked. So now it's build a an app for an OS that has lots of users, and then just do a little tweak to make it run on Windows 10 Mobile. And I will say already, there's you know, there's some quite impressive changed and updated apps. So I mean, you know, we've finally got the Windows 10 Mobile Facebook app is already a lot better than it ever was on Windows Phone 8.
We're going to go to Jeff in a second, and I reckon Jeff is going to say, when are Microsoft going to stop doing a temporary and stopgap solution for cell phones? Go on, Jeff.
That's pretty much... Yeah, it's like you read that.
I saw it in your face, man. It just, they are, though, aren't they? You look at the kin, that lasted, what, 15 minutes, 20 minutes? Not even, maybe, 12?
Yeah. Let's be generous and give it 12 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, and then, okay, and so what we're seeing right now, and with this potential, I'll call it longer play with a Surface phone and all that, what this tells me is that Microsoft doesn't have confidence in their mobile phone platform. And they can't get other people to have confidence in it as well. So instead of figuring out how to fix that problem, whatever it is that's giving people this lack of confidence, they are doing what they've always done. And they're just doing their one-ring operating system, one operating system to rule them all. Let's make one app and figure out how to slap it across all the devices. And because you can buy this desktop app that will work on a mobile device, therefore people will buy the mobile device. This is not going to work. And it really sucks because Windows Mobile is really good. And I like seeing this innovative competition between Apple and Microsoft and Google. And I think Microsoft is completely screwing the pooch here.
The thing is, the stupidity of that statement, I don't mean your stupidity of that statement, but the stupidity that comes through in that statement is the fact that they are actually getting programs to run cross-platform, but they're killing the device that it runs on. They're taking away the Lumia, which is an in-house hardware, which would give them some parity at least with Apple, and it actually functions. There is a decent scroll rate. There is 60 frames a second of interaction with the screen. It actually works for once. It just works. There's a company said that once, I think. And they're walking away from it. And that just blows my mind. The stupidity of that. I'm clearly not clever enough to run Microsoft. There's no question of that, and I fully admit it. But I'm sorry. I think there's some issues there that I'm seeing that other people should be seeing as well, unless I'm way off.
I think it's you know, valid that it's really unfortunate they've done another reboot. And then it is going to be like a long play in something much faster than a mobile environment.
Go on, Jeff.
Okay, so what we're seeing with Windows Phone from Microsoft, to me, is analogous to the Spider-Man movies from Sony.
Go on.
Oh, God.
You just try something, and you totally screw it, so you reboot, and you try it again, and you totally screw it, so you reboot, and you try again, and it's not working. And so now we're at the point where they're like, well, let's reboot, but let's let someone else see if they can do it. And so now Spider-Man is going back to Marvel.
To Marvel, yeah, there we go.
And so now Microsoft is looking to third-party developers to fix what they can't get right with Windows Mobile. And I think this is going to work out well for only one of the sides of this analogy, and that's the Marvel side.
But they didn't get it wrong particularly. The hardware was good. The interface was brilliant. There isn't one iOS user who's used Windows Phone who doesn't go, oh, I wish iOS was this customizable. I wish iOS was this responsive. They all love it. And then you're just kind of like, well, okay, you got the hardware right. You got the interaction with the software right. What's missing? It's the apps. You chuck money at developers to make apps and they didn't make them. Took a bit more money that direction rather than totally restarting and reproducing a line that just doesn't function and reproducing the hardware and software line that doesn't function and costing you four times as much.
Yeah, and this just all plays into the whole thing about Microsoft doesn't have confidence in their platform, therefore
it smacks of Google.
Anyone else.
It smacks of Google. Okay, so we did that. Next. It is Google, what's the word? ADHD. You know, it is, because Google walked away from Christ knows how many things. And they've walked away from... Yeah, they walked away from... what was the beta of Plus, effectively, Google Plus? It was the Buzz, was it? Google Buzz?
Yeah, it was crap, though.
Yeah, it wasn't very good.
If you look at what Google has started and then
not
killed,
finished.
It's almost everything they've ever done.
And not finished. It started and not finished. It's nearly everything that they've ever done, apart from advertising.
Mm.
No question, and it smacks of that. Microsoft is in that loop of that Google are in, most definitely, and they've walked away from Nix this week as well, haven't they? As well, free.
Mm-hmm. Is that web?
Oh, that's right.
Google Graveyard or something like that.
Yeah, there's loads of stuff that Google haven't finished. They won't finish the car. Now they've crashed it. That'll be it. They'll just go. Crashed it.
Oh,
I'm surprised they didn't. Kind of. I'm surprised they didn't walk away from it when it ran out of petrol for the first time. Who's got? Before we do the next great story, we've got a really great demo this evening. We talked about this before we started the show, so I haven't realised that we haven't told the listeners this. With us this evening, we've got Paul Kirkle, who is an iPad artist, some renowned, it has to be said. And he's at the Gadget Show this weekend. So if you're at the Gadget Show, look out for B41, Stan B41, and Paul's on there for representing his college, Guildford College, and he is using electronic equipment to draw stuff, and what he draws is brilliant. It's superb. But we have him in the studio this evening. He's brought down the Pico projector that he's using at the show, and this thing's amazing, absolutely amazing. I've got to turn the lights off though, where you won't see a damn thing. This is Paul. Oh, hang on, someone's moved the. Who's moved the thing? Who's moved the thing? There we go. Much better. So Paul is sitting drawing away. Now this is what's quite interesting. He's looking at it going, okay. So we're looking at Paul's iPad while he's drawing. No, you're not. You're looking at my wall in the studio. We've taken down the sound baffle. And Paul is using styluses that come with a little tiny Pico projector. There's a link in the chat room for it. And it's called what's it called, Paul? Touch Jet. And that's what Paul's drawing on. And you're thinking, okay, so that's like a massive projector. Well, no, the stylus is next to the projector there. This is a tiny, tiny projector. And it's broad. I mean, the image that it pushes out is phenomenal. And what's really impressive about it is the fact that when Paul actually draws, which he's not going to do now, he's gone for his Guinness when I've cut back to the shot. But Paul can zoom in and out. He can select brushes. So what he's done is he's plugged his pad into the projector, but now he's interacting with his pad, but it's the projector that's doing it. It's an Android-driven thing.
There's no pad. It's just the projector. That's it, the pad.
Yeah, no, the pad...
There's no pad.
There's no pad in it.
It's just the projector.
Oh, it's just the projector, got you.
Is an
but you can
projector.
Plug a pad in as well.
Oh, yeah, you can plug anything you want into it. It's an HDMI in.
Right, so it plugs anything you like into it, but at the moment he's just drawing in Android.
All I'm using is a projector, that's it.
Right, so the projector has got Android built into it, and he's got the application that he's bought on Android, this is ArtRage, I think, plugged into it, and he's actually drawing in real time on the wall, not on a pad. So
love that.
What you're seeing here is Paul drawing in real time on a pad with a stylus that's linked to the projector, and Paul drops the mic because everyone's been amazed by this. It really has. It's absolutely superb.
It's quite literally whiteboard anyway.
It is. I mean, and it projects up to 80 inches. We've got to turn. It's a tiny, tiny thing. So it's not massively, you know, in terms of the lumens and that kind of stuff. It's not huge. But it is pretty impressive, and once I switch the lights off, it's crystal clear as well. It's pin sharp. I mean, you can see there on the right hand side the arc of the colour selection tool. It's really, really cool. So Paul has been drawing all night for us. He drew for us during the Mac show, and he's going to carry on drawing during the big show.
So Paul, do you need a stylus to interact with this, or can you use just your finger?
No, you've got to use the styluses. There's two styli that come with it, isn't there?
Oh, okay, so like one for each hand sort of thing.
So that's the full package that you get in a little case for 500 quid. And it's two styli, the touch jet itself, and a remote control unit. And a whole pile
of
cabling.
That's really awesome.
It's available on Amazon. Muller's put a link. It's the only link that you should ever click from Muller.
No.
Amazon.co.uk/touchjetpondsmarttouchprojector. Click that link. It's safe for work. And it's awesome. It really is awesome. He's been putting piles of images as well in the Slack room of Paul using it as we've been going on through the show. Paul's drawn about six or seven images this evening while we've been sitting doing the shows. It is awesome. It is absolutely brilliant.
So do you
everyone and put the lights back on. Go on then. Sorry, Righty.
So do you have to write on the wall itself, or is it kind of pseudo kind of pretending to write on the wall?
There is some touch sensitivity in there, isn't
there? It's touch sensitive, so you can press against the wall, or if the wall itself won't take pressure, there's a button as well. So I'm not too clicky-clicky when you're podcasting.
Mm.
So I'm actually pressing the button when you're left click. Actually, the nice thing about that is you can actually lift your hand away from it and be a good couple of inches away from it.
So you don't have to touch necessarily.
You don't have to physically have to touch
the wall.
You're not scratching the wall then or anything like that?
No, you don't have to. But I mean, the nibs on these things are, they're no more abrasive, I would say, than the Apple Pencil in terms of, so there's no... It's a pencil. It's white, which doesn't show up brilliantly in hard light. But yeah, the tip of that is no different than the Apple Pencil in terms of strength. It wouldn't mark my wall. I'm not bothered.
I'm right. You'll get this, but it's like squiggle glass.
It's like squiggle.
Oh right, yeah.
I've no idea what that means. Just time. Never mind. Who's got another story? We're going to keep coming back to Paul and see what the picture looks like.
Did you see my link, Ewan?
Link, that's way back, isn't it? Hang on.
Oh, it's way back. I can give it to you again if you'd like.
This, please. Oh, no, I've got it.
Show title.
Racist troll says white supremacist flyers to public printers at colleges. Tell us more, Jeff.
Okay, so there's this internet troll that trolls enough that people actually know him by his online name, which is Weave, W-E-E-V. And
there's the breaking question.
Yeah, so yeah, there's the guy. Anyhow, so what he did was he found that he could get at all of these internet-enabled printers that no one had changed the password on, so still had the standard
change
or default password.
Yeah.
And so then he just started printing out his racist crap to these printers all around the United States. It was a really crappy thing to do and a really jerk move. And it has spawned copycats. So there are other people that have been finding online accessible printers and sending their own hateful, racist, whatever messages out to people's printers. and just being general asses. And so I chose this story because first we have this guy that's just a jerk and he's making dick moves. But then it also highlights the fact that we have all these people that don't get that when they're buying a new printer or a lot of other accessories, they're buying devices that by default are accessible to anyone on the internet. And I'm seeing that as kind of a problem, especially when we have stuff like this where people are printing out pretty hateful stuff to devices, and you'd have no idea why all of a sudden your printer is spitting out anti-LGBT or misogynistic messages.
How has he come across these printers then? Is it just, has he gone to the Wi-Fi networks, or is he hacking into the networks and seeing them online in the network?
Well, I'm not that's what puzzles sure me, exactly how he was. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how he was finding these. I know there are websites out there that just keep track of devices that are open to the internet, and there's one that just keeps track of webcams that are open on the internet.
Yeah, and I think there's really in the second paragraph of the article, though, what it's saying is that he didn't actually do anything to gain access to the printers that would fall into the realm of unauthorized access. So he clearly must have been using generally accessible, maybe student networks or something like that that are almost open and easily available. So it doesn't to me sound like he's done anything that would fall into the realms of hacking. But
no, there was no hacking involved.
No, I get that. But I mean, I understand that these printers are outward facing and uncontrolled by password. But I'm trying to realise, this is the stupidity of me, I suppose. As the if these printers have got a 192 password, how's he going to get to, or not 192 IP rather, how's he going to get to them?
Yeah.
They've got to have a public IP, surely, for him to get to them. But then if they've got a public IP, the job of finding them must be, I mean, he must have some program that he's randomly scanning. I don't see how he gets them accurately unless, I suppose universities have got a range of IPs, no?
Well, it depends what they're doing, because in back in my days of IT support, if you were a Windows Wi-Fi user, we use Eduroam as a Wi-Fi network, you'd have to VPN in to use a wired printer. But if you're on a Mac, you could type the IP of that printer in, and you'd get straight through at that printer. It depends
from
what he's using.
An outside IP.
Yeah.
But they were public issued IPs, not 192 IPs.
I would assume.
Yeah, see, that's my question. Is if you're talking about a printer in a business, usually they've got an intranet IP issue, haven't they?
Well, they have a range, wouldn't they?
But, well, I'm stupid. I'm willing, before you send in letters complaining about my lack of knowledge about IP addresses, there's a queue for that, so you're right at the back. But what I'm saying is if universities have got printers, have they got printers which are accessible through an IP range that the school then publishes, or are they 192 printers that you've got to be in the school network before you can print?
No, every university has its own IP range.
Yes, but that's what I'm saying. So these printers have got their own outward facing IP.
Yes.
Not an inward facing IP. So that's where he's got, but how he still found them is just what puzzles me. It's impressive in some respects, even though he's a complete twat.
And there's no apparent access controls on them at all. So I don't know how it works in university, but the company that I work for, yes, it's all internal. I need a group within my Active Directory account to be able to print in the first instance, and then I need to use my ID card to take that print off the device. So within the company that I work for, they know exactly what I've printed. There'll be a full audit trail of it. Now, I would have thought in universities, particularly from some sort of cost control point of view, surely to God that you wouldn't allow it just to be totally open, that anybody can just print anything. Obviously, print cartridges cost money, paper costs money. I would have expected some type of control in there that allows some sort of network admin to know who's printing what, and whether they have to pay for anything. That's a totally different matter, but whether that's like student ID card on some sort of touch sensor to print stuff off. But I'm intrigued at how open it would seem, even to genuine users.
So what I know is, and we found out by mistake, is like I say, Windows uses VPN, and if you know the IP address of the printer, you can print to it. For some reason, OSN devices over Wi-Fi without a VPN straight in. We have managed print services. When I talk about printers, I'm talking about like kind of just normal non-managed printers that are in offices or study rooms or things like that. We do have managed print services where you put a campus card in and you scan in, scan out. But there is some sort of vulnerability that I know between Windows and OS X. OS X breaches that security. I just wonder if that's what he did.
Well, we got a couple of comments from...
What he said is that he targeted publicly facing printers.
Yes.
So it'd be printers that were accessible from outside a firewall or there was a hole punched through a firewall already.
That's interesting because I know that my organization has a web print function where you can have credit on your account and print to a queue within the university. So I wonder if he managed to hack into that. Because you can print from home, turn up at university, and then print out when you get there.
I wonder, we might be overthinking this. This could just be that he decided to go to Shodan, a very famous Internet of Things search engine, and search for, well, printer model, whatever. And these printers just happen to be standing at, for instance, universities. Default configuration, just plugged into the network. Universities have huge amounts of IPs. They just get one, and they'll pop up. And, oh, I can print to that. Let's print nasty, evil stuff.
Hmm.
So that seems a massively random route, though. That's what I mean, he's got some kind of coordination here if he's printing the amount that he is, according to the article. Hmm. But... just deep pan in the chat room is saying things. Universities sometimes have an outward facing IP for students to access without being on the network, so he's confirming what Wrighty's saying there. And it's called pull printing, apparently. And then he said an IP suite using SNMP would report back the device on the end of it. So I'm presuming that means it would report back that it's a printer, so we just do a sweep to find anything that comes back and says, I'm a printer.
Yep.
And then flies into it because no one's put any security on that printer.
Yep, default configuration is E.
Yeah. Still got the change me password.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, if you've got an outward facing printer that you can access from the web, then put your password in, people.
Exactly.
It doesn't seem a bad thing, but it's also quite annoying that there's idiots like this out there.
To try and counteract that, did you guys see... Sorry, is my audio quality that bad? did you guys see the funny one of The Sun putting out that thing on Twitter asking for cleavage shots for £1,000?
Go on, and this is related, how, Alan?
I thought it was actually an example of people on the internet not being dicks, in that what actually started happening is lots of blokes started sending their fake cleavage shots back to the
Sun. I just thought about doing that myself, actually.
And I just thought that was actually, you know, a time when the internet and Twitter actually turned out to be a nice thing, or turn a nice thing around.
I'm dropping another link in the chat room because I just found this.
AI. Ewan, this is how we pay for the Mac Minis.
What?
There you go, boys.
Sending pictures of my cleavage. Jeff's just put another link in the chat room. Gizmodo, Google finds 86,000 unprotected printers live on the internet.
Right, and this is from 2013.
Oh, right, that's an article from 2013, so there's 10 times more than that now.
Right. And so this was just HP printers. You know, and HP printers have a built-in web server.
They do. JetDirect, yeah.
Yeah, no. I've got an HP system, but it's not linked via the it is linked via the Ethernet. Oh, okay. I might go home and check that before I start churning out something.
Ewan, you're going to love the picture that I'm about to send to your printer. it's a wide format printer, right?
I'm just thinking about the cleavage thing with the OS. And did everyone see Batwings last week drinking the orange juice?
Yes.
No. Yeah. See, so what you need to do is go to britishdownnetwork.com /big and get to the very end of last week's big show. And it might be the Mac show even. It might be the Mac show, /Mac. And Batwench does a trick with an orange juice and her cleavage, and I think we'd win. steady on streak. It wasn't that good. it was kind of fun, but it wasn't, you know, choke yourself.
You know, you never know you.
Who's got another story? Come on. Come on. I can edit. Oh, Camps is in next. There we go. Domino's pizza delivery via a robot. Oh, Jesus Christ, mate. Do you know what a robot is in Yorkshire?
No
idea. I just saw this story and it looked good.
So Domino's apparently are trialling the Domino's robotic unit over in New Zealand. This is an autonomous vehicle which has got apparently a 20-kilometer range to deliver pizzas.
No one's going to nick this, are they?
No.
This is the traffic cone of students for the 2000s.
You see, I'm not worried so much about nicking the robot. It's the pizza inside. I'd be gutted if they did.
Good man.
Robot was never mine to start with, but the pizza I paid for.
So apparently this can navigate curbs. It can navigate roads. It can't do driveways.
But can it navigate really leads?
It can't really do driveways because it's not height aware yet. But the idea is that that Domino's are gonna trial this and allegedly they see this as being a bit of a USP for them and something that's going to take the world by storm. It kind of got me thinking when I was looking at it. I thought I see absolutely no way for this to progress from a pizza point of view for exactly the scenario you mentioned. You and this thing's going to get nicked. It's going to get turned over by idiots on the pavement.
I've just got this thing in my head. In 2016, the robots became height aware.
but
took out all the short people in Yorkshire.
What I do see a use for this is in things like hotels, room service, in things like hospitals, deliveries to...
there's lots of curbs.
Yeah, it says it can handle curbs, it can handle pavements, it can handle roads, allegedly. But I see in other industries, potential some benefit of a robotic unit like this. I just thought in a week where a lot of the serious stories with the Apple FBI stuff and the Microsoft keynote, I just thought this were a bit of a light-hearted story, a bit of an interesting one.
I love the article that you posted for it. The quote from the New Zealand Transport Minister. This is an exciting opportunity for New Zealand. Over the last 12 months, I've been actively and aggressively promoting New Zealand as a test bed for new transport technology. And he got a Domino's pizza robot.
Jesus. Yeah.
He thinks he's got a self-driving car.
The only thing you can say, though, Camps, is in this picture, there is no scale. I mean, this thing could be the size of a truck.
In the video, which has got about a minute's lead into it, it's about half a human height.
This is the size of a small dog. This is going to fit in the back of you pick this up in the wheels. There's no security on this.
No, this is something that, like I say, I do not see this out in the wild, but I do see in hotels for room service, like I say, in things like hospitals, delivery to operating theatres, delivery to wards of certain things. I do see a bit more of a use for it in some industries like that.
Because there's a lot of curbs in hotels as well, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you know, and surgeons need pizza.
Oh, good point, Jeff. Did they do a sterile version? That's operation room friendly.
Oh yeah.
OR friendly pizza.
Yeah, we should do that.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe for intimate delivery.
You wake up and you've got a chili still stuck inside you. Or worse still, the bastard had a Hawaiian and you've got pineapple stuck inside your incision.
That'd be dark.
And you're like, who the hell eats Hawaiian pizza, for Christ's sake?
Doc. I think a breaking technology though on this particular device, it's got two particular compartments. One is to keep beverages cool, and the other is to keep pizzas hot.
That can't work.
Beverages cool and, well, exactly, hot and cold just don't mix in Norfolk, do they?
They do, my boy.
They do not, mate. You've got one. We got one device, and it'll keep it hot, or it'll keep it cold. We can't be doing both.
What be this hot thing you're talking about? You don't make fire.
It's called Naga, mate. That's the one thing you have got. we're cutting back to. Here we go. We're cutting back.
I just stopped.
Oh, you've just stopped.
Just starting a new one.
I was just okay. We did have another one. Hang on. We'll come back to it.
Please, it's not exactly. Paul, tell me you're working on a pizza robot.
No, it's not
exactly. Pizza robot overlord.
This one's not. Hang on, we need to get. Oh, there we go. We've got focus. It's all right. This is Muller, and it's not a particularly flattering picture of Muller. And and on his chest it says, "Please click my links."
But I do like the buffering symbol. You know,
We literally just stopped. But there you go. Click my links.
I want to have this Jasper carrot.
Excellent. Well done, Paul. This is awesome. I love it. Can you come every week?
for the curry, maybe.
Yeah, I'll buy you a curry every week. That's no worries, mate. No worries at all.
How about your liver?
Boom, flights come back on. Bring the wife, it'll be fine. I've got to say as well, Alex McQuilkin sent me an email during the Max show saying he was coming over. Him and his wife are coming over to the UK. They're staying down in London. They're doing the whole touristy type thing from overseas. But they've booked the 14th to come up here. They're coming up on the train. They're going to make it for the pre-show curry beforehand, and then they're going to come here and they're going to sit in the show, and then they're going to check into the Travelodge over the road after the piss and not drive on Friday. So there you go.
Nice.
That is proper fandom.
Well done, Alex.
Proper fandom, Alex. Well done, mate. Who's just got the next story? Who's put something in? God. Thanks for that diversion from real tech camps. Alan has put his story in. Here we go. Microsoft Build, the 10 most important announcements from Microsoft Build. Talk us through them. Do I need the Alan Freeman music?
Given that we've already spent quite a bit of time talking about Microsoft stuff, I was actually just going to pick one of the 10. I can run through all 10 quick. Up to you.
What are the highlights for you?
For me, I thought actually the interesting one was all about that Microsoft sees speech as probably the next big user interface, and then they're going to link up. So, I mean, obviously they've been doing reasonably well with Cortana, talking to her and stuff. Now they're sort of taking it further. Yeah, no, it's
way better than Siri.
Usable, you know, does quite a lot. They're making Cortana smarter and working, you know, more with third-party apps and stuff. But then they're also introducing a layer of bots, where these are, you know, UI-less apps, but they understand things through speech and or understand it through Cortana telling them and talking back and forwards to you with speech, or even over using Skype as the if they're remote from you over the internet, using Skype as the sort of voice interface. So I thought that was quite interesting in terms of actually looking to bring all this connectivity we've got back together.
So, I mean, Swamp Rat's putting in the thing, I have no desire to talk to my device, in quotes, but actually, I find myself an awful lot more saying, hey Siri, and I've even got to the point of, hey Siri, what's X divided by 5? And you know, just because I can't be bothered to pick a calculator up, if I just say it, she goes, it's that. And it's like, okay, thanks very much. And it's done. And I find hey Siri really, really useful, but Cortana, the kids, because all my family have got Windows phones, I'm the only person with an iPhone, and Ellis has got to using Cortana, and he uses it brilliantly, and it is very, very functional. It's way, way better than anything that Siri's got to offer. Siri goes to a Google link. I'll click this Google link if you want to find any more, because I'm done enough. Yeah, steady on. It really is like a laissez-faire lazy bastard at times compared to what Cortana will do. It's not good.
There's a lot of good stuff, and the fact that Microsoft's sort of opening up all of these APIs of machine learning and AI research from Microsoft Research to the people who want to make the apps and want to make these specialist bots, which can then hook in and talk back and forth with Cortana, and therefore obviously what you want Cortana to do, I think is taking the next leap on to making things a lot more, you know, a lot more usable. So funnily enough, Domino's are in there. So Domino's, Microsoft already showed off a Domino's pizza bot.
Hey Cortana, you know, please can I have a pizza delivered to Yorkshire by a robot? And tell the local idiots not to nick it in it.
Or set it on fire. Pizza if you want to live.
Yes. And you go, this pizza's cold, and the thing goes, I'll be back.
Put it in the wrong
compartment. Yeah, they're talking about, you know, all sorts of things in terms of, and I mean, they showed some really clever sort of things, starting like when you've got your calendar, Cortana can, when she's, you know, if you've given her permission to look at your email and stuff, we'll go and put, we'll actually go and put things like your air tickets and travel things and your hotel bookings into your calendar, but marked with a Cortana symbol. And then if something comes up and you say, you know, someone invites you to, do you want to catch lunch today or something, then if you say yes, and you'll be able to do your text messaging and even calls, you know, on your PC connected through via your phone, but then Cortana will actually say, okay, right, well, you want to eat, here's some suggestions of where to eat. If you say yes, it'll then look in your calendar and automatically send notifications that you need to move some other meetings that you had to the next day or the next slot and stuff and things like that. So it really is sort of becoming more personal assistant, and these bots apparently are the sort of one of the key technologies to let Cortana be able to do more things for you, not just sort of start and not just start things and not just interact within your calendar and your PC, but be able to interact with other end services.
Yeah, it's I'm struggling here because there's a bit of me is sitting going, that's really fantastic stuff, well done Satya, but are you going to walk away from this as well in another year when it doesn't work properly and where no one's gone, wow, that's pretty cool? Because everyone goes, wow, Cortana's cool, and then they say they're going to do loads more with it. I'm like, well, okay, fine, just develop it, just make it, do it. Don't tell us it's coming, just do it. Do what Apple do to a certain degree, you know. Don't leak out what you're going to do before you do it. Just do it. Just stand up there and go, this is what it does now, rather than this is what it's going to do. And if everyone goes, ooh, then we might actually do it. And if no one goes, ooh, then we might not do it.
But to be fair, they can't be secret like Apple anymore, because a lot of this stuff that's coming in the Windows 10 anniversary edition in July to, you know, everyone or the general public that are on Windows 10 is going to be showing up almost immediately in the Windows Insider builds. So because they're open and letting people do all of the beta builds and the Insider builds, they can't actually keep it secret any longer than this. It will actually be seen by people almost immediately, but there will be a beta phase that insiders will be doing until it comes out publicly in July. And they have actually committed that it is kind of July timescales that we're going to see these sort of things.
Yeah. I'm really rooting for Microsoft. And I remember Jeff going back a year, 2 years, saying this is not the Microsoft of my youth, the things that they were saying. But they've said an awful lot and delivered very little.
Yeah, no, it's a very good,
that
very
would
good
be
point.
The Microsoft, right there.
Yeah, no. Well, they might. No, that's not true either, Jeff. Because the Microsoft youth wouldn't have developed. They wouldn't have gone to R&D. They'd have stayed safe. They'd have manufactured an OS which worked, and they'd have crunched it out time and time again. And you'd still have got Minefield in the applications and Solitaire, and that was it.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, when I say that reminds me of the Microsoft of my youth, what I really mean is Microsoft had a pattern back in the day of announcing vaporware products so that other people wouldn't be able to make products. Then they wouldn't actually deliver on their announcement. They just didn't want anyone else to do it.
Yeah, no. Go on, Roger, you were going to say something just then.
Well, no, it is... You're right what you said, you know. I was talking about what I said before at Windows Phone. You now think, you know, if they're backtracking on that platform, any platform that comes out ahead, are you thinking, are they going to deliver on this in 2 years' time? So actually, not just Windows Phone users, but developers in general are going to go, do I invest time in this and development for this? Because it may not be here in 18 months.
I think the thing is, if you've got an innovation, that innovation is better than the other innovations that are the same, like Cortana is. You don't need to say this is what's coming. You just need to keep being ahead of everything else and just doing it. And by saying what's coming, I don't think they do themselves any favours, because all they're doing is getting the people at Siri to go, oh. And then actually when they don't deliver on it, everyone goes, oh, Microsoft are shit. And that harms the sales of their phones and their hardware and their OS.
But to be fair, these bot announcements and the framework, actually 22 APIs for developers to start using were announced at the keynote. So they are actually there. They're not future announcements. We won't see them as the public until July onwards, but
no.
Developers are playing with them this week.
Don't get me wrong, I'm absolutely rooting for Microsoft on this.
Everyone needs three people in, you know, Apple, Google and Microsoft competing, or any three companies competing, is so much better than two.
Give me your cheese, your crust and your pepperoni. I'm paraphrasing. Good story, mate. Streak, now you've put a story in, mate. This is quite interesting. Using Ad Blocking Plus to block ads is perfectly legal, rules the German court, .. for the fifth time?
Yeah, I was kind of amazed about that. It's apparently been up in the German courts that many times, and still they keep trying to push that somehow, in someone's mind somewhere, ad blocking is not legal? Eh?
The case has been brought by Süddeutsche Zeitung, and it's the fifth case that's been brought, and they decided in favour of the makers of software who are based in Germany. The court in Munich also ruled the Acceptable Ads Initiative is a scheme that requires larger companies to pay for their ads to be whitelisted by AdBlock Plus is acceptable under German law. And there's another bit there as well, I suppose, that if you've bought AdBlock Plus or if you use AdBlock Plus and then they whitelist adverts, that seems a bit crass. You're installing it and then you're actually getting ads in the end anyway because AdBlock are getting money. That's like almost a protection racket.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly what it is.
It's, go on, Jeff, because you're the legal man on the team here tonight. So what? No, but I mean, that sounds like a protection racket. We do this, and if you do this, then we'll pay you, and we'll let your ads through. Otherwise, if you don't, we'll just beat you senseless.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like a protection racket, but it's also a very clever and crappy way to sell ads. So... you as an advertiser, you are selling your ads to websites so that they show up on the website, but then you turn around and also pay the ad blocker developers so that your ads go through. And it's a clever business model, but it's very disingenuous for end users who are trying to legitimately cut down on how much bandwidth they're having to use every month on their mobile devices and trying to block ads that might be malicious. Because, you know, some ads are actually really messed up and injecting malware on people's computers now and they're invading privacy. So I think there's a valid use for these ad blockers and creating an ad blocker that's basically a racket to let you show ads, that's crappy
horrific
thing to do.
That is absolutely horrific. I've got to say. Exactly. I mean, there's a certain, the criminal is genius equally as mental, but I'm sorry, but that's... if you've got an ad blocker, well, if it's a free ad blocker, then I kind of say, well, you got what you paid for. But if it's a paid ad blocking service that you've had and then they start letting ads through that are then paying them to let them through, that's just that's no. that's I want to go around and beat the shit out of them for that, because that really is theft in my book, no question.
Exactly.
I mean, has there been any other legal challenges that anyone can think of? Because I haven't recalled any legal challenges in the UK for ad blocking software. This is the first time I've ever seen a case related to it, and there's been four previously, so Streets, you know, right to pick it, but I've not seen anything come up about ad blocking as a challenge. I know that there's been questions raised to Apple about whether it was right for them to put ad blocking programs in the iTunes store for or the App Store, but they've always been quashed and thrown out. I've never seen a legal challenge like this. So
not over here, no.
No, not that I can remember. This is the only time I like really seen any kind of legal action being taken. That's kind of why I chose the story. And I'm kind of surprised it hasn't happened in more places. I suppose it could be that, you know, because the AO, the company there, is in Germany. So
we've got the one thing that really frustrates me about the 21st century is the ability to create a layer within a business that wasn't there before, that you perceive adds value but doesn't. And you know, if you look at health and safety is a great example of that. You look at the construction safety stuff that they do. You go on a one-day course and you have to have the one-day course and you have to pass this end test, and everyone says, well, it improves safety. Well, okay, but actually what it does is make money for you in the middle, and then you go to lobby government or you go and lobby businesses and you sell that thing and say, right, well, our qualification is far better than everyone else's. So you get small people that do an equal qualification who then get crushed by the fact that they're not as big as you are. They haven't got the lobbying facility and they haven't got the ability to start swaying large multinationals, and yours grabs the headline, so you get in. And there's a group of people who sponsor the National Weather here in the UK. And basically they suggest that if you're not on their system, then the trade that you offer is maybe invalid, because they run checks to allow the people to be on that register. And I understand that there's a value in registers and checks, but actually, you know, sometimes some of those processes that take place, I'm not suggesting that theirs do this, but it's a form-filling exercise and a money-grabbing exercise, so that it's okay, right, okay, you can be on our system, but as long as you pay us £300. And I had a firm say, we'd like you to register with these people because we're now going to them for our procurement. Okay, so
you have an incoming call from Chris Campion.
So I registered with these people. And then the next thing I got from them, I mean, it was literally like, congratulations, thank you for registering, here you go. Now, if you pay us £500, we will put you on our level 2 registration. If you pay us £1,500, we'll put you on our level 2 registration. And if you put us on £2,500, we'll put you on our level 1 registration. And that will get you access to the following companies. And you're like, hang on, you know, this firm that I've worked for 10 years says, we've gone to procurement from these people, please register with them. And now all of a sudden, I can't work for this firm unless I give you £500.
Yeah.
No. And that they've created this layer of business that just didn't exist before, so that they can make money, not so that adds any value to the third-party organisation or to the suppliers that there are. And it's a cancer. There you go. That's my view. It's an absolute frigging cancer in society at the moment, business society most definitely. People that shove layers in so that they can make money. And this feels like one of those. I'm going to ad block, but I'll let all the ads through if you pay me.
All right.
And that's cancerous. And I think the court should have shut that down, because that really is a protection racket, no question, in my mind. Oh, well, there we go. It's civil, not criminal. What are you talking about, Muller?
It's civil, it's not criminal.
All right, but it's criminal as in... No, it's criminal as in... As in, it's wrong. I didn't mean it as it's actual criminal law. I do apologise for getting my legal terminology wrong. Pedant.
So it's civil then?
It's civil, absolutely it's civil, no question.
Hooray, we have Captain Pedant at the show.
You can
show
pick
today.
Yourself up next week, not me. All right. Good story. I think that's got an interesting one, because I think that's wrong. This podcast and all this is brought to you by UK2. And I said this on the MASH, and I'm going to say it again. You know, you look at certain places and they go, all right, well, read out our advert that we tell you to read and then just put in /BTN. And if we get anything, then we might send you a bit of cash, you know. Might look after you. Or you get people that say, okay, well, we'll come with you for like a week And if you don't get any responses instantly, then, well, you're obviously crap and we're going to go. And UK2 is nothing like that. Absolutely nothing like that. These guys came to us 8 years ago. And when we were speaking to them, we said, look, you know, we've got this little podcast network. We don't have that many downloads. But, you know, would you like to sponsor us just in case it all goes humongously great? And they said, yeah, sure. We ought to be, you know, we'd like to do that. That'd be a good thing to do. And they sat down with us, and Andy Manning, who was the guy at the head of marketing at the time, said, yeah, we'll definitely do that. And they looked after us. They've been looking after us for 8 years. They make sure that we pick up no charges for bandwidth, we pick no charges for storage up, no hosting charges, no domain name charges or anything like that, so that we can keep running as the BTN network, as we currently do, and have all of the past episodes that we've got back on the servers, so we can keep playing in the NQL channel and we can keep providing service to you. And you know what, if you're a service that says, oh, well, we've got this, but put /BTN, then we might give you a bit of cash. We don't get any cash from UK2, none at all. We just get the services. The services we've got from them are pretty impressive. You know, the server that we have costs £400 a month. And the one that we've got from 100tb.com costs $160 a month. And we get that free of charge from them because that is their sponsorship to us, to make sure that we are cost-free. And to be honest, I'd rather have that, to be honest. And if someone said to us, well, okay, you know, we'll give you a couple of quid here or there, and we had hover.com come to us, but all they wanted to do was do a /unit, and that would be it, you know, and I'm sorry, but if you're not good, then bugger off. Well, we've never had that from UK2. They're just brilliant. They just sit there, they've supported us in the background, and certainly for the first couple of years, they were giving us far more than we were giving them. And now they're happy with the fact that the BTN listeners really look after UK2, and I really want that to be the way it should be. I don't want us to ever go to the stage where we forget that these people looked after us when we had nothing. Mm-hmm. So please, please, please support UK2. Go to britishtechnetwork.com/UK2 if you just want to sign into your account, or go to britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors, and you'll get all the offer codes there that UK2 offers. You can empty your basket by up to 20%. And if you're renewing, you think, oh, okay, well, it won't take the offer code online if I renew. Ring up and renew to the sales team, and you'll get the offer code through, and they'll give you the 20% off. That's how much UK2 think of us, and I think worlds of them, because they looked after us when no one else would, and when we weren't worth looking after, if you like, because we didn't have huge amounts of listeners like we do now. So thank you, UK2. Thanks for not being a fly-by-night advertiser who just pisses off after the fact that it didn't work out for you after 1 week, because I value it. I don't care about anyone else.
And Ewan, I was going to say, I think it's just past 22 years since I bought my first domain name from UK2,
wow.
And I've never needed to go anywhere else.
Tweet that out, wow. Mate. Tweet that out. And if you're listening to this show, stop what you're doing now. Stop the car on the side of the road, as long as it's safe to do so, obviously. And tweet out, thanks to looking after at British Tech, at UK2, please. Because, you know, they really have looked after us, and I feel really strongly about that. I sat and thought about it. I thought, no, you know, there's a lot of advertisers that say, oh, we'll do it for a couple of weeks, and then we'll just piss off. And UK2 have never done that. They're awesome. Look after them, because they look after us. And the other one is Hoya. Hoya look after us. Hoya, actually, so I've got... let me show you this. This is pretty cool. So Mark, as you know, comes down on the show pretty often. And these glasses that I'm wearing are the Hoya Avantec that they gave me to review. And these, the focal length of these, they're only useful to the camera and down to my keyboard. And I walked out the door tonight and I looked at the floor, and about 20 yards away from the office, I looked up and realised I got the wrong glasses on because I couldn't see bugger all. So I had to take him off. But Hoya have really looked after me unbelievably. And this thing here is a Lupe that goes on the back of my DSLR. And I look in that end and I can see what the screen says, and it allows me to hold the camera up to my eye to do some filming. And there's a little dioptery type thing here that works, a ring that allows to control and zoom a little lens on. I used it, and I said to, I was passing, just talking to Mark, I said, oh, it never works anymore. I said, it's outside the range of my prescription. And he said, give it me. I said, well, you can, yeah, fine, take it, because it doesn't work for me. He said, okay, give it me, and I'll take it to play. And they sent it away to Czechoslovakia, to one of their research factories, and they completely reground a brand new lens to go in there for me.
That's amazing.
So it was a great little R&D project for them. They actually loved doing it, don't get me wrong, but what it means is, for the next 5 years, based on my prescription and based on my decay of my eyes, as Mark suggests from being an optician, this will last me for another 5 years. And it does. It's brilliant. It's absolutely awesome. And they did that for me. Yeah. And they'll do that for you as well. If you, no, you don't need a Lupo. What I'm saying is they'll do your glasses for you. If you wear glasses, then check out Hoya, podcasts at hoya.co.uk or podcast at hoya.uk, with the S or without the S, it doesn't matter. And say to them, I'd like to arrange an eye test, and that's fine. What they'll do is they'll take you, if you've got an existing prescription, you turn up at an optician's that they service, and there will be a Hoya technician turn up with the iPad, and they will measure your eyes, and they'll give you a quote for how much the eyes, you know, the glasses are going to cost you. And if you don't want them, it's fine. You walk away, probably doesn't cost you anything. That's it. If you do want them, there's some amazing styles. There's the beautiful glasses that I'm wearing and modelling here, which are beautiful and gorgeous. But, yeah, modelling, right. But there's some new ones out. These are called the top loaders, and these are awesome. So I've got two support mounts on either side of each lens. These are different. These mount only on the top, and they make them even lighter, even stronger, even less distortion in the viewing. And they look stunning. They look really, really good. There you go. That's them on the back side where it's connecting. And if you want a pair of these, they're not the cheapest of glasses, but it's like buying a Mac. You know, you buy a Mac because it's a decent computer and it actually functions. And if you want to go and buy an Asus piece of thingy from PC World, then you can do. But don't be surprised when it falls over after a year. These things are quality lenses, and the dipping process, there's a vat that these lenses go through to dip, to seal them, and the vat of fluid costs $30,000, and they have to change it every 3 months.
Wow.
So, you know, these things are really cared for, and we did a little stress test on these when Mark came up before and put my glasses under and Muller's glasses under, and then we put a pair of Avantech glasses under, and the stressing on the lens is zero, so therefore the vision is distorted less, and therefore the acuity that you get is far higher. So check them out, and they, when you go and have them made, you will have the whole iPad treatment, and they will be custom fitted to your face, the angle will be exactly correct, and you will get the glasses that you are paying for. They're high quality glasses, most definitely, and they're not that expensive, they're not bad at all. There is a review on the blog, or on the review section on the, if you go to britishtechnetwork.com/review, you can see the Hoya review, and it's got some prices listed in there of how much they're going to cost you, but podcast at hoya.co.uk. Okay, time for the cool thing then. Streak, start us off, my boy. Come yourself off mute as well.
Ah, yes, that would be a good idea, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, good luck.
Yes, something I got a few months back, actually, I haven't really gotten around to talking about too much yet. It's this little doodad. I don't know if you can see it due to my horrible video quality tonight. It is a SanDisk, very pathetically small, but huge in storage space, USB stick. 128 gigabytes in something this size. I am blown away by its functionality. It is lethally fast, especially when you connect it to USB 2 computers. It's one of the absolutely fastest USB drives of any kind that I connected to like older computers. It just blazes over files way faster than I thought was possible over USB 2. Utterly impressed.
Price?
Varies a little bit. What was it I got mine for? That would be like, £5 or something like that. It's a good exchange rate, I suppose. I don't know. Let's see if we can find something comparable to that one. Get quickly here. Talk amongst yourselves or anything.
Okay, well, what we'll do is, what we'll cut away while you're looking for that is Paul drawing his next bit. Just stand in front of the screen for a second, Paul. Because then it'll focus when it sees you. There we go. And there you go. British Tech Yo, Android and iOS. Was it Blue Android? It's the British Tech thing, right? Okay.
Yeah.
All drawn on my wall, and not permanent as well. I won't have to wash it off afterwards. There we go. And was there individual layers as well within that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. See, look at that. It's amazing when you got someone who's got a modicum of talent, as opposed to the rest of us. Well done, mate. Did a sterling job. He's been drawing all day at the gadget show setup, and now he's here drawing for us.
Yes.
Dance for
I'm
me, bitch.
Sleep well tonight. Dance, scribble monkey, dance.
Dance, scribble monkey, dance. We've got a title.
Oh,
excellent. Good pick, mate. Jeffrey, what do you have for us, sir?
I have something for you today. Here comes the link. And And this is something that I think anyone... Okay, it's a product that's being targeted at iPad Pro users, but I think this is awesome for anyone that's using a tablet, or it works great with a laptop also. And I have one right here, and there you go. So it's called the Park Slope, and it's a solid aluminum stand, and it has a cutout on the back so you can run cables through it. And it holds your iPad or other tablet at a really great angle. And what I'm totally loving about this is that it puts my iPad at just the right angle for drawing.
Yes.
So I can set this on my desk. And one of the problems with Apple's smart keyboard cover is that it doesn't fold up into a position... So you can have your iPad, you know, at an angle like this. It just doesn't do that. So I can leave the smart keyboard on, set this on the stand, and now I have a perfect drawing and painting angle on my iPad. And if I need to pop my MacBook Air up onto my desk and use that, I can set it on the stand also, or in lieu of my iPad, and have a good typing angle for that too. It's really nice. I'm very pleased with it, and it's not that expensive for what it is. It's like $50, and it's called the Park Slope.
That's just cost you 35.
And it's from 12 South.
I've already got one.
Oh well, there you go. So that means that I saved you $50 today because you didn't have to buy one.
No, you checked my tweet out. There you go. Andrew's a good pal of the network. When we first started doing the bash, he sent over half a dozen 12 South things to give away at the bash, and I really, really value the 12 South stuff. It's incredibly high quality. They don't make crap.
They make really good stuff. Yes.
Yeah, they make really good quality stuff, and you buy that aluminium. And it's bent to a good angle. The other thing that you get with those things where you get, this is going to sound stupid, but you know, you bend a piece of aluminium with two separate legs, and the fact that it actually sits flat, that was massively important to me. That, not because of the fact it wobbled or anything, but I just thought when that comes back, you can clearly see that there's a great potential for that not to sit flat if it was manufactured by some moron on a high output machine somewhere. But all the 12 South comes back like it's been made by one bloke who's been doing it for 50 years. It is really good high quality stuff. Thank you, Andrew, but you're a bastard because you cost me a fortune. Bad one. No. Righty, what have you got for us, bud?
Well, as you know, I do be a designer nowadays. I'm doing some safety training videos at the moment, and what the client wants at the moment is an interactive video where people are trying to escape from a fire. So they want a video where you kind of go down a corridor and it says you either go left or right based on what you click on the screen. You go left or right, and it's in the right way or the wrong way. And I tried a few different products, and I found a thing called Wrapped, which was a great product. Did everything I wanted. It's a cloud-based thing where I can do node-based branching videos. So I can have a beginning video, and then based on what you click, it can go to one video or another video, and then send it back to the beginning. Unfortunately, I got an email from them, told me that it cost me $16,000 a year to run it. And I thought, well, that's not a lot of good. So did a bit of hunting around, tried about 20 or 30 different other products. But I found a thing, I put it in the chat room now. It's called Interlude Treehouse. So if you want to make your interactive branch-based scenario Interlude videos,
yeah,
it's absolutely free.
Okay.
And it's absolutely brilliant. And you can do all the same stuff you can do in the $16,000 product. Just to be embarrassing, I will put in the chat room. This is just a mock-up of a concept video that we're doing for a client at the moment. but it just shows you, you put hotspots in and buttons and go left and right, and it's got timers and quizzes in, all those sort of things. But if you're looking to make your own interactive video or advert or anything like that, yeah, try Interlude Trio. It's absolutely free and probably one of the most powerful bits of video software ever used.
That looks impressive.
It's awesome.
I'm going to sit and play with that. That may be something I subscribe to, most definitely.
Yeah, it is really powerful, and you can make some really... You know, the thing I've made is pretty basic at the moment. It's just a concept for the client to show that you can go left or right and go the wrong way the right way. But, yeah, it's got effects and all that sort of thing, and, yeah, great stuff.
And there's no fee, there's no subscription?
That's... No, it's all free. All they ask is... if you want to play it on an iOS device, you play it through their app, and they'll put their logo in the bottom right of the video.
Okay,
your video
so
is awesome,
like,
but yeah. why do you have the Stampeding Horses sound in the background? Run from the horses, run, run.
Well, because East Anglia is all about the horse, isn't it, mate?
Mm. All right, well, that makes sense.
It's all about the horse. Street, you'll be pissed off to hear that if you want your pick... 128 gigabyte card, ultra flash card. It's $24.99 at the moment on Amazon with Prime. But there's two. All I can tell you is there's two less to buy now. So I've already bought them. Well, right, who's talking?
Five
left. Prime? Six, seven left. There's Prime on
six.
It.
Six
gone. Six gone.
I've bought it.
There you go.
I've put it in the basket.
Two gone. No question.
Yeah, done.
This show cost me fortunes. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, 25 down here as well.
Yeah, well done. Camps, stop downloading the porn and pick something.
iOS game for me this week. So, Shadowmatic. A guy at work suggested this one to me. It's single player, bit of almost a shadow puppy type game. What has gone on with my video there? I'm assuming the audio is okay. Shadow puppet game, so you've got a scenario where on the game there's a bit of an abstract object. You can imagine a light source pushing through that to create a shadow on the wall. And the idea is that you rotate the object into the light to create a familiar shape on the wall. So,
right.
Like I say, recommendation from one of the guys at work, and I started playing it. It was £2.29 in the UK App Store. An hour and a half later, when I should have been listening to on a conference call, I'm still sat there playing it, and loved it. The artwork in the game is great. It's another nice idea and a very easy to play game. So definitely a recommendation for me. But
go on.
Typically, the following day, went into Starbucks, and it's only the pick of the week app. So I'd already paid for £2.29 at that point in time, so a bit late for me, but I did pick up some cards again. So if anybody wants a free app code, DM me in Slack, in the Slack room, and I will send you a code. But if you don't manage to get one of them, if you're not a UK listener, get on the App Store and download it. £2.29 in the UK, so it's probably going to be £2.99, I would expect, in the US.
Excellent, good one. Shadowmatic, and it looks like a good morning motion game, or not a good morning motion game.
It's a dead leg game.
It's a dead leg game, right? Okay, cool. Alan, what have you got for us, sir?
As I say, something that caught my eye was a combination of artificial intelligence and wearables. Seems to be a real thing, not vaporware. So it's a video, and it's from basically there's a blind developer at Microsoft Cognitive Services, who I hadn't heard of Microsoft Cognitive Services before. But basically, they've put together this software that integrates into his glasses, and he can actually basically just sort of activate it by stroking the side of the glasses, and it will use artificial intelligence to look through the camera in the glasses and then describe what it believes it's seeing. So he gives some examples of he's out on the street, he hears an unfamiliar noise, and he goes and things, and it goes and tells him that it was a skateboarder performing a trick.
And then later on, he's talking about a more business setting where he's sort of talking to people, but blind, it's rather difficult to gauge whether the audience is interested or not. So he strokes the glasses and it tells him that, okay, there's this, tells him the gender of the people looking and facing him,
wow,
what age they are, and what sort of facial expression they're doing. I thought this was quite, I mean, this is obviously
incredible,
potentially life-changing for a blind user, but I also thought it was really interesting because it obviously, the age thing and the facial expression thing is stuff that we've obviously seen Microsoft release as those jokey apps more recently, you know, the Guess Your Age one and things like that. So obviously they're still refining it, and there's a good opportunity for the AI to get things wrong. I notice it tends to say on the video, I think this is, but it was describing it as a skateboarder performing a trick or a girl throwing a orange frisbee in the park. And then, as I say, giving description of this. So, I mean, that just seemed great. And I think, you know, obviously for blind people, this is amazing, but as it develops more, it's a great sort of another sort of non-visual augmented reality application in some way, isn't it?
Yeah, no.
So, yeah, that video is definitely worth a watch. I put it in at 39 seconds starting just on the chat room, so it jumps straight in, but, well, it's only 2 minutes 44.
Brilliant. No, good video. Pick. Good pick. We're going to go over to Paul because he's done yet another drawing here.
No, I just made it green. You told me green.
He's gone it green. So there you go. He's taken the Android blue kid and he's turned him green just in the time that we were talking. That's awesome. I've got to say, so what's that thing called then, Paul?
It's a TouchJet Pond.
TouchJet Pond.
And the app is ArtRage.
And it's just ArtRage. And it's run natively in the Android that's on the projector.
So that projector, that's all you need. It's a 450 quid projector. It's a Pico projector. It spits out a laser grid to capture the styli, and it runs Android. So you can do everything that you need from that little unit.
I mean, Paul's been drawing all night here. He's an absolute Trojan because he's been drawing all day at the NEC, and now he's sitting here drawing all night. But the pictures you've drawn are brilliant, mate. And they're all drawn. Everything that you've seen tonight on this show and the Mac show has been drawn on my wall using this Pico projector. It's an absolutely stunning piece of kit. And the thing is, I've hovered over the click twice, and I'm just thinking, well, actually, I'm not sure what I choose it for. Which has been rather sensible of me, which is not usually like me.
Yeah.
It was the fact that it was three figures maybe in the Prime.
Yeah.
But there is Prime on it, and it's on Amazon, so.
Only Prime in the US.
Yeah. It's very good, very, very good. Lights back on, careful. Whoa. Fellas.
Live.
I'm going to go, my cool thing, I'm going to go for something that I really appreciated on Sunday night, which I had not really, or this weekend in total really. I've been down at Battersea covering some rail workings, and I was up in Birmingham as well covering some rail workings up here. And do you remember what the weather was like on Sunday night when Katie swept through?
Yep.
Yeah, so I was filming in that. Okay, and it was it was friggin' horrible. Okay, I came home and it took me an hour just to wipe my equipment dry. You know, I'm not talking about me tackle. I'm talking about like my camera and my lenses and all that kind of stuff, and dry it off and repolish the lenses and that kind of stuff. My camera shut down three times because it was so wet out on track. I'd got decent covers on there, trying to cover and protect the cameras, but even that didn't do any work. But the one thing that I had with me, and I've had these things for 3 months now, this is uber low tech, and you go, oh Jesus Christ, but I promise you, if you go out at night and you're sitting thinking, you know, sometimes I get caught and my hands get cold, Zippo do a 12-hour pocket warmer. That's what it looks like, and you think, oh, it looks like a Zippo lighter. It's not. When you pull the top off, there's like a little a gauze kind of thing on the top. You get the Zippo fluid and you fill it up with the 12 hours that it says on the tin. There's a little marker that says 6 hours and 12 hours, and you put it in. Then you light the grid and there's no flame whatsoever. You put the top off in it and these things just start glowing red hot. You can't hold them without putting them in the bags. They're that hot. But there's no flame, so you're not going to burst into flames if they catch hold of your clothing or anything like that. And they blow for 12 hours hot air out into your pockets, and you put your hands on them and your hands, I mean, imagine me trying to operate a camera with frozen fingers. It just doesn't work. And all I have to do is put my hands in my pockets and these things warm them back up again, and my hands work. It's brilliant, simple as that. They are £17.57. It's a bit of a random price, yes, I know. But they're on Prime. And you can buy Zippo lighter fluid and replacement heads for them. And the fluid's ridiculously cheap. It's something like £4 for two tins. So I've got a dozen tins. And it doesn't use it that quickly. But when you put them on and you run them, they run and run and run. You can't switch them off, that's the thing. When you get home, you have to take them out of the pouches, leave them on top of the pouches, on top of the counters, on your cooker or something like that, and then just let the heat dissipate. But they disappear. There's no flame, so they're perfectly safe. They're not going to ignite anything. They're not going to make anything burn or anything like that. And the one thing I would say to buy, which is well worth it, is a waterproof lighter, you know, the windproof lighters, because to get the actual gauze going can be quite difficult to start off with, but the windproof lighters get it going almost instantly. They're brilliant. And you're looking there going, oh, Carl, you and fair enough, but you know. That you go out for a night out on the town, you can buy a couple of these, stick them in your pockets, hang your coat up, coat's not going to burn, it's not going to burn the pub down, and when you get out at night and it's freezing cold and all your mates going, God, blimey, it's cold, when they put the coat on, you put your hands in your pockets and you're like, yeah, no, it's not. They're awesome. I've got two of them. I've got four of them, actually. I bought two pairs just in case, because the other ones got wet and they wouldn't relight the next day. So I have four. And they're on Amazon. And they've got Prime. Where can we get a hold of you, Streaky Boy?
Well, you can probably find me running around using a webOS phone in 2016. Otherwise, just run on over to streaky.com and you'll find me everywhere else via that.
Good man. Thank you. Where are you, Jeff Ray?
I'm hanging out over at MacObserver.com and on Twitter. I'm at JGamut. Same thing on Instagram. I also have Fresh Brewed Tales, which is my blog where I write about the weird stuff I see people do in coffee shops. I finally got a new post up like a week or so ago.
Excellent, mate.
Yes. And I'm on like almost every podcast.
Excellent, buddy. Thank you very much. Next thing, we Camps, where are you, sir?
I'm Camping UK on Twitter, most weeks on the Big Show, occasionally on the Mac Show, and in the Slack room.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. And you put a link for the Shadowmatic.
I've sent you a link, and if anybody else wants just drop me a DM in Slack.
Will do. Thanks, mate. Where are you, righty boy?
That Paul's on Twitter, mate, and doing it down in the Slack room.
I love the Slack room, mate. If you want to get in the Slack room, send me an email to britishchatnetwork@gmail.com saying, please let me in the Slack room and I will let you in. Yeah. Yeah, Paul, he's in a lot more lately. Yeah, definitely. And Castaway Show coming soon?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I had a bit of a delay. You know, I've been away for a couple of weeks, but yes, very, very soon.
Excellent, mate. Looking forward to that. That'd be good. And shut up, Muller. And Alan, where are you, sir? You're on mute, that's what you're on.
Best place to find me or start to see what I'm up to is Digital Amoeba on Twitter.
And Digital Amoeba in the Slack room as well, as. My name's Ewan Rankin, you can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. If you want to know someone that can draw brilliantly on a wall using a Pico projector, then it's Paul Kirkle, who's at Kirkle on Twitter, and kirkle.co.uk, K-E-R-C-A-L. There we go, is that right?
Genius.
K-E-R-C-A-L.
Yep.
That's it. You've forgotten how to spell your name there. I started with a C, I admit, but yeah, I did start with a C. Yeah.
I was
thinking
level we didn't need.
We'll see you next week. We got Max Show at 7 o'clock and we got Big Show at 9 o'clock as normal on Thursday. Oh, it's going to be great. What a great network we've got. I love it. All about that. Yeah, no, we were coming back from the curry house, right? And Muller said something. And I said that was going to happen. No one listens to a bloody word I say. Everyone ignores me. They think I'm just some twat. And
you're not just some twat, Ewan.
And Paul said, you're, no, Paul, no, Ewan, you're the glue that holds all the loonies together.
Yeah,
Oh!
Then I said, no, you're the Fritz stick.
It was a lovely moment.
It was a great, nice thing to say.